Hi, this is Bonnie Burke,
and you're listening to FSF Podcast.
Welcome to the FSF Podcast. I'm Tim. I'm your host. And of course, I am here with Kathleen, my trusty co-host. Our guest today is an author, editor, journalist, and an unabashed Star Wars fan. I became familiar with her work after talking with Kyle Newman about the documentary A Disturbance in the Force. Since then, I followed her on social media, did a little light stalking, nothing major, looked into her work, and decided that we needed, it was research. I'm sorry. It's the lovely bow of research.
Yeah, you can call it research. That's investigative research, I think.
Exactly.
Put the pretty bow on it.
That's right. We put the pretty bow on it and decided that we needed to have Bonnie Burton on the show. So welcome to the FSF Podcast, Bonnie Burton.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I went and did some light investigative research as well on you guys.
Awesome.
And listened to some of your previous shows. And you've had quite a lot of my friends on. So I was like, okay, well, this is cool. You've had Todd and you've had Will Wheaton and you've had Kyle Newman, who you mentioned, mm-hmm. and Kat Tabor, who I love. And,
amazing.
A lot of people that I knew very well when I worked at Lucasfilm for like a decade. I got to know a lot of these people. In fact, fun fact, with Fanboys, Kyle Newman's movie, I was the liaison between Lucasfilm and the production company because they were going to shoot at Skywalker Ranch, which is something that never happens because you're not allowed to shoot at Skywalker Ranch for anything. You have to get permission, and it came directly from George, yes or no. And George he read the script and liked it, and so he approved it. But I think the only other things that were ever filmed there were a Brad Paisley music video. I think it's the one about nerds, for obvious reasons. And then a Dixie video. Are they just called Chicks or Dixie? I forget.
Probably they're just the Chicks now.
Yeah, because Dixie is probably not. Anyway, they just got a music video there. But then this was, I think, the first, unless it was a documentary about Skywalker Ranch, you couldn't just shoot it. You couldn't shoot a movie there or a TV show or anything without George's permission. And they gave permission to Kyle, but it was going to be shot, I think, on a weekend or some sort of holiday weekend. So no one was going to be around. And so they're like, hey, do you want to be the person that makes sure they don't, run up to George's office and take stuff? And I was like, okay. So I went and it was really fun. And I got to know Kyle and Ernie, who was, the writer, Ernest Cline, who wrote Ready Player One. He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
The screenplay competition or something. And also I met Kyle for the first time that way. I met a lot of the actors that way. And then because I don't know if you're familiar, Fanboys takes place in the 90s because it takes place when Fanboys comes out. And Kristen Bell's character dressed like I normally did all the time.
Okay.
So I was like always in 90s goth gear for a very long time. And so I got to be her stand-in in the movie for a few things that were shot like in the van or shot with whatever. So that was, and by standing, I mean like they just needed a shadow of a girl or something. That was, so that was fun. But yeah, I met Kyle Newman and I became fast friends. We've been friends for a very, very long time. And then he knew from my stories of working at Lucasfilm and just being at Lucasfilm for so long that I was one of the few brave people to say I loved the Star Wars Holiday Special. I saw it as a kid because I'm very old. And so I saw it on TV when it was live. Taped it with a tape recorder because there was no VHS yet. So I had audio for a long time. But I'm a huge fan of it. I'm a huge fan of the camp of it. I'm a huge fan of the story. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of the audacity of how long it is and how crazy it is. And also, of course, the Boba Fett cartoon, which everyone forgets. That was the introduction of Boba Fett. A huge Carol Burnett fan. So the Carol Burnett comedy show, those writers wrote the Star Wars Holiday Special, but a lot of the people in it were from that, like Harvey Korman. Of course, as a kid, I'm going to love that. They could have stuck in the Osmonds and the Mandrell sisters, and I wish they had Cher, and it would have been the perfect thing for me because variety shows were so huge back then. So anyway, we did a documentary called A Disturbance of the Force. It got really great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. The fans loved it. A lot of talking heads. I'm in it, a talking head in it. But also you have Seth Green and Pat Oswalt and people from
Kevin Smith
and two brave people at Lucasfilm that no longer work at Lucasfilm that were on record talking about it. Myself, Steve, the fabulous Steve Sansweet, who runs Rancho Obi-Wan and was, you know, Lucasfilm from the start. Jonathan Renzler, who recently passed from a battle with cancer. He was head of publishing. He was a dear man, very talented. And also he wrote all the behind the scenes books. So he knows all the dirt about everything. But that was it. Like there weren't, of course there's no George, there's no like, you know, he's not in it, but it's a fun documentary to see.
Just
the craziness of how did this even get made and why is it this way? And why is it never aired again? And how is it we can only get it on bootleg copies on DVD, but you know, in the bins at Comic-Con? Like that's, so I don't know. I'm really glad that I did that. But yeah, I did a deep dive on you guys and watched a lot of your interviews and they're very fun. So so that's very long way of me saying thank you and welcome to How I Talk.
That is a very awesome way of introducing yourself and I love it. And it actually leads right into my first question. So look at you go.
Okay.
So here, I asked this question. Let me
drink some drink. This is a vintage Star Wars. I think it's Burger King, right? Or was this Wendy's? I can't remember where all the glasses came from. I'm probably drinking in lead right now, but.
You probably are. A little bit's okay.
I can do that from a Stanley cup anyway.
Yeah, you're Gen X. You drank from a garden hose. You'll be okay.
Yeah, I'll drink some coffee while you're asking the questions.
There you go. All right. So clearly you love Star Wars. And I ask this question of anybody who's even remotely Star Wars adjacent. And you're more than Star Wars adjacent.
Oh, no, I'm in the cult. Like I'm in the cult. I'm drinking the blue milk every day. I was a Star Wars fan before I ever worked at Lucasfilm. I never anticipated I would ever work for them. I was shocked when they hired me. I was shocked I lasted as long as I did. So I am very, but also, you know, even though I don't work there anymore and I don't have any ties to the company, I'm still very much a fan of Star Wars. Especially anything Dave Filoni touches. He's a friend,
but
also a very talented man. And also he loves Star Wars. So you can tell when someone loves Star Wars when they're making Star Wars, which I think is really important and doesn't always happen that way. So, yes.
Agreed.
Question, I still drink the blue milk and I'm still legally married to R2-D2.
All right. So let me ask, because you kind of touched on it a little bit, so I think this might even be the answer.
Okay. But
what got you into Star Wars and what keeps you coming back to the galaxy far, far away?
That's a good question. So I was a farm kid. I was raised in Kansas, born and raised. The second part of my youth, junior high, well, let's just say high school, college was Colorado, but Kansas, I was in a very rural area. My grandparents had a farm that we were on all the time, pretty much there constantly. So farm life is something I know real well, boredom, know real well, but also because I am full on ADHD, but full on creative weirdo. I was constantly making up stories about space in my head. Before I even knew what Star Wars was, I knew what Star Trek was. But my parents were not nerds. I did not come up from a family of nerds. For the longest time, I thought maybe I had been adopted and someone forgot to tell me. I thought for a long time, maybe I was aliens. Whenever I would scrape my knee, I would be like disappointed I didn't see wiring because I wasn't sure if I was even human. So when Star Wars came about, you know, especially if you remember, this is the 70s. So when the movie came out, I was very young and like very, very young. And we weren't wealthy. We weren't even middle class. So going to the movies was expensive. It was time consuming to find a theater. And also my parents weren't real big movie goers. Big avid readers. My mom is a third generation librarian, loved books. And my dad he read a lot of mysteries and Westerns. So, which is great because reading all of his Westerns primed me for Star Wars because it's technically a Western in space. So it's those cues and motifs and tropes. So as a kid, and again, my memory's kind of shot about childhood because I was sick a lot, in and out of hospitals from just preemie issues, asthma, allergic to the world, all of that. And so I didn't really have the same experiences that a lot of normal kids would have had with Star Wars. But I distinctly remember going to a drive-in theater. And for those of you who don't know a drive-in theater, so they're making a comeback because of COVID. That's one of the good things that happened with COVID. It's a theater that's outside with a huge screen, and you go in your car or your truck and you park up to, like, there'd be a micro, like a speaker, or you tune your radio in to, I think, all the way to the end of dial 88 or something AM or whatever. And they would daisy chain some things so you could hear it through your car radio, and you could watch a TV, and there's concessions and stuff in another building that you go to, but you drive in, and what we had a huge truck, pickup truck, because that's what everyone drove in Kansas still do. And we would just, you pile in a bunch of kids. I don't even think it was by kid. I think it was just like by vehicle. And for us, so it was like you could stuff as many kids in that back in the truck bed as you could. And we'd have sleeping bags and, like, you know, it was like a really fun thing to do. And if you were even smarter, you made friends with the kid who had the house that was right up against the drive-in theater, because then you could just go on the roof and watch movies. That's how I got into R-rated movies as a preteen and teenager, was roof access.
Solid plan.
I mean, that's the best way to see horror films, by the way, is on a roof. Anyway, so we saw it as kids. We saw, and I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it was either, I want to say it was Star Wars or it was Empire Strikes Back. But this was an era where these movies would stay in theaters for years. So it isn't like now where it's like, oh, right. I got to see Dune 2 before it's out of the theaters. There was no out of the theaters. It was there for a very, very, very long time. So because those movies made money, you don't want to get rid of the money makers and have it replaced with like something like Woody Allen at a drive-in theater is not going to be as great as Star Wars. Let's put it that way. I mean, I didn't even mention Woody Allen because I don't want to. But you know what I mean? Like of that era, her sisters, which I think didn't it steal the Oscar from Star Wars that year?
As
a kid, you're watching it. So when you're really little, you also have zero sense of reality. So if you can watch a space movie at a drive-in theater as a kid, that's awesome. Because at night, drive-in theaters are mostly outside of town. They're not near streetlights. They're not through city lights. So you get a perfect sky, kind of like your backdrop here. You get a perfect sky, night sky of all the stars, and it'll seamlessly connect to the screen. So for the longest time, I thought I was watching a real thing when I was a little kid. You see the Millennium Falcon go off and off screen, but then the sky is right there. So you're constantly like looking around like you're in an IMAX theater, and this predates IMAX. So it would have been just like, this is real. This is really happening. Also, double features were a thing, and they had nothing to do with each other a lot of times. So I think the way that I saw Empire Strikes Back was Cannonball Run might have been playing, or Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
Smokey and the Bandit. And so we went from watching Empire to Smokey and the Bandit, and I think I mixed everything up. So when I would retell it on the playground, kind of like that, what's the dragon movie with McConaughey? Reign of Fire. Is that it?
Oh, yeah.
And Christian Bale. When you're telling the little kids, it's kind of like a Mirror's Mad Max Thunderdome, where they're retelling, even Return of the Jedi, when C-3PO is telling the Ewoks the story of Star Wars through mime and sound effects. That's what it kind of, I would do on the playground, because when you're on the playground, you have to retell everything to the kids who didn't see it. So then you were kind of doing grassroots marketing on the playground. Oh my God, you should see this. This happened. But because I'm dyslexic and I remember things differently, I thought Burt Reynolds was Han Solo. I mean, I probably just like invented Spaceballs in my head too, because I was like, oh, and then it's Dom DeLuise as Chewbacca. Like, I just didn't, I wasn't really understanding. That was one all huge movie. I got really into it. Anyway, so
I would pay to see Dom DeLuise as Chewbacca. I'm just saying.
So I was, and that is kind of Spaceballs. If you watch Spaceballs, John Candy is kind of like taking that reign. But yeah, so
yeah, pretty close. Yeah,
yeah, I got into it through drive-in movies, and then we didn't have money for action figures and stuff because again, I don't want to say we're poor. We weren't like Loretta Lynn, coal miner's daughter, poor. Like we didn't have an outhouse. We had indoor plumbing, but. You know, toys are things you get for Christmas and birthdays, and they're not a lot of them. Like now I look at my kids and even my own nephews and nieces, I'm like, guys got it made. Cause like my younger brother and I had to share everything, and I was not a Barbies girl at all. The only doll I had was the Linda Carter Wonder Woman doll. Thank you very much, which was gorgeous and beautiful, and I loved her. Because all she also had dark hair. There was no Barbie with dark brown hair. There's no Italian-American Barbie for me to represent me. And also, I didn't like the other girls that played with Barbies. I'd like hanging out with the boys that played with Star Wars. So you almost, and this sounds so LA to say this out loud, but as a kid, you kind of had to suss out who had the best toys and then become friends with them.
Yeah. Oh, so, I did the same thing as a kid. So,
I mean, these are the kids that when they would circle stuff in the Sears Christmas wish book, they'd get everything, where I was lucky if I had one thing. And then half the things I was circling were also in the Hickory Farms catalog, not just the Sears or JCPenney's. And Radio Shack, I was a big Radio Shack kid. I was like, give me a Casio, give me a talking whatever. I don't care. I'll take it.
Sure.
Predates Nintendo, so we were getting like Mr. Wizard, and my dad's like, welcome to your video game. And it's like, this is a Mr. Wizard math calculator. That's not a video game. Well, I did not ask for that. So like Star Wars for me was such a creative outlet as a kid, because we would act out scenes at recess. My first imaginary friend was Luke Skywalker. I didn't even just say Luke. I said, no, it's Luke Skywalker. I had my hair done in those Leia buns for three different school, like 3 years in a row, school pictures. I would
love it.
But also, like, I knew I didn't have enough hair. So, like, I remember getting in trouble one time. I would use those big, like, the little Debbie honey bun snacks, but still in the plastic wrap. And then I wrap my head around it, and then I'd wrap my hair around it. And like, I made a teacher call me Leia for 3 months. Like, I was in it, like a full.
You were committed.
I was committed to character. I was method acting before I knew it. And so that excitement, that love, also as a crafty kid. So I was making Star Wars puppets and Star Wars magnets, and I was drawing scenes, and which is funny, because then I ended up, years later writing the Star Wars craft book. And a lot of the crafts in here are crafts I did as a kid, like the Emperor,
cool.
Emperor Palpatine, which is just Apple, it's what they call Apple dolls. They look super creepy. It's, I think, an Amish craft, but we learned it in 4-H. And it's just like, you just, you dry out apples and they make squishy faces. And, but also Bean Art, there's a Bean Art Bosque in there that I remember making in 4-H. It's just like, I was crafty. I was like trying to start my own industrial light and magic in my downstairs basement. And also I was just convinced everything I did was art. So I was like, plastering the refrigerator with all different renditions of every scene I could remember. And this is also an era where we didn't have streaming, we didn't have internet, we didn't have DVDs, we didn't even have VHS yet. So we just went off of memory. I think that's why so many of us watched it over and over and over in the theaters, is just to keep the memory going. So many years later, when I became an adult and I started working for Lucasfilm, I always rewarded, and I did a lot of events with kids at all the conventions, not just Star Wars Celebration, but Comic-Con, Emerald City, Rose Con, all the cons. And I made sure that there was a drawing section on the website so kids could learn how to draw all their favorite characters. That's what I loved to do as a kid. And I started a craft section online, and those became books. But we would do workshops also at cons. But also, when I would work the booth at Lucasfilm, I always had like a huge bag of freebies, whether it was buttons, magnets, stickers, anything. So I could reward kids for, doing their best. I would do a Wookiee Roar contest when I first manned the booth at Comic-Con. And this is before everyone was there. So it was like 2002. And we didn't have like the full extravaganza booth that you see now at Comic-Con. But neither did anyone else. None of the other studios were doing that yet. It was an actual Comic-Con. It wasn't like everything else. And I would give kids, I would get a microphone. I think we got a bullhorn. It might have been a bullhorn, because I remember getting in trouble for this. I brought a bullhorn, and then we do Wookiee Roar competitions every 3 hours. With a bullhorn. You would hear me do this. And it was funny, because a lot of people said, that's how we found the booth, because you doing this. And then people were like, what? And I'm a big believer of, I'm doing it until someone says I can't. So I'm a big risk taker until I get in trouble. And I think that's now part of the orientation guide for Comic-Con. Fenders is they can't use bullhorns. That might have been my fault. That might have been my fault because that was something I adapted from my old roller derby days. So I think that was my fault. But I would give kids like stickers and stuff. And also, I would take pictures of everything and then put it on the website later. I mean, this is also predates digital stuff, like digital cameras and stuff. Because we were a website doing stuff no one else was doing it. We had a webcam on a movie set that never happened before. Lord of the Rings copied us. We were doing a lot of fan outreach, but I was celebrating them online. That's why we had fan blogs that you could have your mm-hmm. own blog on StarWars.com. No one else did that. And I was a big believer in community, and I still am. I still think with social media, you have to remember the social part. So when I started our social media at Lucasfilm, no one else was doing this. And I was doing hashtags like Wookie Wednesdays or Sith Sundays. And I was like, hey, show us your favorite collections or your crafts or your drawings mm-hmm. or your short films. And then when we were doing fan films, I got to be part of that and, you know, kind of figure out which ones to pick to have George look at for the finals. So community was always a big deal to me with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me come back. It's not even the cool stuff that you see now. It's the fans that make me want to keep being a fan. And I'm talking about, I'm not talking angry troll fans. I'm talking about just people that are like, hey, I made this cake. I made this gingerbread that looks like an AT-AT at, depending on how you speak. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, oh my God, that's great. Or they'd be like, oh, I made like my good friend and I miss him dearly, Grant Imahara. We worked together at Lucasfilm for years and years and years before he went to Mythbusters. But he made an animatronic Baby Yoda and would take it to children's hospitals to cheer up kids. As does the 501st, cool. Like the 501st Legion, the 501st, the R2 Builders. Here's the thing. Those whole groups of cosplayers make me proud to be a Star Wars fan because they go above and beyond. I don't know if you've ever tried to jog in, an outfit like a Stormtrooper fiberglass thing. You can't, but they still do marathons, charity marathons, dressed as that.
That's insane.
I mean, I was there too for the parade, the Rose Bowl parade. So when George was the Grand Marshal, I was there. I think 2 weeks early to help everyone. We got the military guys that were in the 501st to train everyone how to march in unison, which is not easy. And also it's hot. It's Pasadena. So they're in these, you know, you're in with buckets on, you're on, your helmets are on. So for me, it was always Star Wars is great. I love Star Wars. I love the stories. I love the world building. I love the characters. I love everyone that works on it. Everyone that brings it to life. But what brings me back, and it brings me back to this more than any other fandom, is the fans and how excited they are and how every generation has their own favorite movie, their own favorite thing. Mm-hmm. And it, mm-hmm. and also it's so inclusive to women. It's queer friendly. It's for everyone, not just the whitey whites. You know what I mean? Like everybody can be represented, but everyone can love it. And it's very inclusive.
Agreed.
And it should stay that way. And it should stay open and happy and exciting. And you can hate things. That's cool. But just know other people love it. And that's cool too. And I think that's something that brings me back is the community of Star Wars more than just Star Wars. So that's your TED.
I agree.
That's a TED Talk answer.
No, I love it. Fantastic. Because I mean, coming in just at the tail end of your comment there, you know, you're talking about how, you know, it's okay to hate things, and it is.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that, you know, other people may like that too, and you don't have to be a dick. You can just, you know, let people like the things they like.
It's not to the death. You know? It's not to the death. I mean, I like a lot of stuff that people hate. Like I said, I love the Star Wars Holiday Special. When I find out someone has never seen anything Star Wars, I start them off on that. Because then prequels look fine. So people, and also I just had this question when I was in Montana. I was hanging out with some new friends and Sarah introduced me to her family and they have young kids. They have kids that are 10 and younger. And when I told them I used to work for Lucasfilm, which I always do that with kids because I want them to immediately like me. So I always bring that up.
It's solid there.
And I was like, what's your favorite movie? And almost all of them said prequel movies or one of the newer movies, you know, and then their parents who are a little bit younger than me were like biting their tongue because they're like, but that's not what I love, but that's okay. You don't have to. I think bad parenting is forcing your children to love the same Star Wars movies you love. Mm-hmm. You need to let the generations pick, and there's plenty to pick from.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is. But talking about the Star Wars fandom and the excitement that you've had at the cons and the celebrations, not only, and I mean, you already mentioned this earlier as well. So a lot of people will say, they'll joke that they're married to their work.
Yeah.
But you literally are. You married R2-D2, which I think is fantastic. And then I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
And it, correct me if I'm wrong, but from the pictures, was the ceremony performed by Darth Maul?
Yeah.
That's so, even better.
I know. We're and also, like, let me tell you, the discussions I got in with super fans, they're like, that's not even canon correct. I'm like, that's what you're worried about? By the way, this was also at the beginning of when people were really caring about your Facebook relationship status and really looking at it. And I remember, because I'm perpetually single, but even when I'm dating people, I keep that private. I don't put it on social because I have a hard enough time keeping friends. I don't want to, you know, risk romance going sour because of whatever social media thing that happens. So I, anyway, I never post that I'm dating someone when I am dating something on social. So I changed my Facebook status to married, and I think my stepmom was like, wait, what? And saw the photo of me that I had posted on Facebook. And also it hit the wire, by the way. Here's the thing. When you have Adrienne Curry, who's the first winner of America's Next Top Model, as your maid of honor, and she's dressed in a skin-tight black Lycra, you know, officer's uniform from Star Wars, you're going to get a lot of, it's going to go viral, is what I'm trying to say.
And it's going to get a lot of pictures.
We're in on the joke. So let me back up a bit. So, by the way, my stepmom was like, you couldn't have worn a dress. Like, that was her concern. No, I'm kidding. She,
married an android.
Even if I marry a human, I'm probably going to wear a tuxedo because I'm just not a dress girl. But I, it was during the brainstorming of, okay, what is Star Wars Celebration going to be? What are we going to have? And this is, you have to remember, this is an era when we're experimenting, we're trying to figure out what fun stuff can we do, what's legal to do. It was before gay marriage was legalized, and it was not a legal thing to get married by a Star Wars character. I think it was in Indiana. It wasn't the LA one. So it might have been the LA one. I can't remember if it was LA Celebration, Indiana Celebration, Indianapolis Celebration, or Orlando. It was one of those. But we also had tattoos. You could get a tattoo. You could get a Star Wars tattoo, which was, I think, the first time we had, we were able to do that legally because all the health code stuff, you have to make sure.
Right.
The wedding stuff, we're like, well, gay marriage isn't legal in a lot of states, but also it's going to be too hard to figure out how we can make all these weddings legal. Also, what if you like decide to get married to someone you just met like in a speed dating thing and then you decide that was the worst? You don't want to pull a Britney, I guess I should say, at Star Wars Celebration. So we didn't make them legal, but the weddings that you could have, they were officiated. You could pick which Star Wars character that was around, which cosplayer was around. We had the best cosplayers, by the way. So they were always in character. Who you want them to be your officiant?
Officiant? Yeah. Officiant, yeah.
It's not religious. It's not minister or whatever. But also, you could sign up and what they would do is that you get a video shot. So you get to go down the aisle. And there was groom and bride seating, so you can have your friends there, you can have fans there. By the way, it's open, so anyone can just walk in and sit down, which I found out real quick, because I think we broke a couple of fire codes with my wedding. And we were basically like brainstorming and marketing meetings. Okay, what are we going to do to make this fun? And I'm like, okay, well, you have to do stuff that like people want to take pictures of. I'm like, well, we should back it up. We should have speed dating. We should have all this other stuff. And we knew that G4 was going to build like this ice Hoth cantina, so it was made out of ice for drinks, so you could go in there and like it was like a bar setting. So I was like, oh, that's great, because then I can have a date there. But they also had speed dating, because a lot of the conventions were starting to do nerd speed dating as a thing. So we're like, oh, let's have speed dating. So we did speed dating first. So also I had a cameraman, I had our documentary team, who are like award-winning. These are people that are real amazing people. And I'm like, hey, you want to do my wedding video? Like, I was, here's the thing, when I worked at Lucasfilm, I had access to the most talented people on the planet, and I made them do stupid stuff for my amusement, but also for engagement, for fans, and for the website.
I love it.
Holy, like I had Matt Wood, who is amazing sound editor, designer, Ben Burtt's right-hand man, but also just very talented in his own right, award-winning, blah, 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 blah. I could go on and on about Matt Wood. he does the voice of Grievous, General Grievous in the prequels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, hey, we have Halloween coming up. Can you do some, like, just do some things as Grievous and we'll just stick it on the, and people can download it for their haunted houses. But I also had him doing like Valentine's Day greetings. Like, I just had a lot. Once I find a talented person I can be friends with at Lucasfilm, I'm like, okay, this is what you're doing. Didn't think about, I don't know, SAG-AFTRA rules or, you know, like any kind of union rules. I was like, oh, you're
rules.
Yeah, you know, rules. So when we're thinking up ideas, all these great things are you could do at Star Wars Celebration. You could do speed dating with fellow fans, maybe make a romantic connection. Then you could go to the G4 Ice Cantina and have an ice drink inside the Hoth-themed cantina. And then, if things go right, you can have a fake wedding and have a wedding video, wedding photos. You get a wedding gift, like a certificate, like an actual wedding marriage license that's fake. But you get photos and you get all this great stuff, right? Like when you get a picture taken at, on the roller coaster at like Disneyland. So I was like, okay, well, now that I know that's on place, I'm going to do a story narrative of me and R2-D2 falling in love at Celebration, at speed dating. I had to fight girls off, by the way, because that was not, he was not supposed to be at speed dating. I talked to one of the R2 builders. I'm like, who wants to marry me? And so we got one of the R2s and we got him at speed dating. Can I tell you how many people freaked out when they saw R2-D2 was actually speed dating? They thought, and I had to fight off other people to just get to him. Cause I'm like, no, 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 we're doing this for me. This is staged. You can be ringers, but I'm the one he's picking. And then we took photos of that. And then we went the next night, I got dressed up and he had a little bow tie on and we went to the Ice Hoth Cantina in G4 and had our date. And then people were starting to wonder who didn't know me, if I was okay and delusional because I was literally on a date with R2. Girls would come up and because he's such a chick magnet, female fans would come up and be like, I want to take a, I want my picture taken. And be like, he's mine. Like, I turned into such a bridezilla. I was like, no, we're on a date. Like, I was serious. And people were like, there is she okay? And then the next day, and then we did a fake proposal. So, like, his, like, little tray came out, and I had a ring, and then I had a restraining bolt that I was like, this is yours. So that was, like, his wedding ring was a restraining bolt. If you know droids, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And then...
Right. No, I get it.
Yeah, and then the next day, we're like, okay, getting hitched. And had to be early before the line started. So Adrian Curry was my maid of honor, which was hilarious. And then Seth Green wasn't on that one, but Steve Sansweet walked me down the aisle. It was very sweet. And then we had the groom side, which was like the Rebel Legion, awesome Rebel Legion cosplayers and stuff. And then we had the groom side, which was a mix of droids and Sith. This is where it breaches canon. Darth Maul married us. And I'm sorry, Kathleen, you're probably like, does she ever shut up?
Oh, no, you're fine. You're good.
Darth Maul was the guy who's going to marry us, right? I and my maid of honor, oh no, the flower girls with KT, the KT droid, the pink R2-D2 astromech that was, I don't know if you know the whole story of KT, but it was the founder of 501st to memorialize his daughter and whatever. So she was one of the flower girls. I think also we had a mouse droid flower girl or something. We had a lot of droids in the procession, and then Steve walks me down. And then I'm standing next to Adrian Curry. By the way, brides-to-be, don't have a supermodel as your maid of honor because you're going to not look as great. I'm just going to say that right now. It was not a mistake because I wasn't competing for it. I just thought it would be fun. But in the future, maybe don't do that. And
good future note, yeah.
Darth Vader was the best man. Because, you know, makes sense. He made R2 as a kid, right? And then I believe we had C-3PO, one of the C-3PO cosplayers, try to break up the wedding as it was happening, like Graduate style. So like the movie Graduate, when he tries to like stop the wedding. Mm-hmm. And then either Elvis Trooper or one of the other troopers took C-3PO away screaming. And he was trying to break up the wedding. Because it's like, if anyone here, you know, has something to say, I don't know the official words, but you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so we get married. By the way, full house. Like every single fan that could just break a fire code. Like we went, all the droids were there. We had group shots where it looked like a crate. If you weren't a Star Wars fan and you saw this on media, which by the way went viral, so CNN covered it, NBC, all the BCs covered it. And then Jezebel wrote the scathing article about how I was a delusional fan and how I wrecked Star Wars. It was like a takedown piece. It was like my first takedown piece. I'm like, it's a joke. I'm not really married. And then all these like psychiatry sites started posting it going, this is an example of someone who might need help. And I was like, what? Or does it turn into this thing? But here's the thing. I'm still married to R2-D2. I post anniversary shots all the time on social. It went off like crazy. People started having more and more Star Wars themed weddings, which was a thing before I did it. I didn't invent it. But I think more people came to the Star Wars closet doing those types of things. And then also every celebration after that, people are like, are you going to do something? Are you going to have an anniversary party? Like people were like wondering if we're going to have a bridal shower. I had to explain mechanics there a little bit, but you know, not bridal shower, baby shower. I'm like, I'm not having any, nothing metals coming out of this. So I was just like, you know, I did it for fun to promote. And then I did a whole thing about being robosexual. So during, I'm queer, so I'm bisexual, but during, you know, coming out month, I would always try to bring up robosexual. Now I can't, because now it's might actually be a thing and I can't joke about it. But I was just like, yeah, this is just, you know, you don't have to marry someone human. And it just became this thing that just took over and went crazy. But I am so proud of it. Because I think it's a perfect example of when you are a Star Wars fan, you are going to go over the top to a lot of people who aren't Star Wars fans. Sometimes you're not going over the top enough if you're friends with other Star Wars fans. But I never did it to like make fun of fans because I am one. I did it to show I did it to show the side of the sense of humor of it. I think sometimes we're so ingrained in fandom. Live, breathe, drink it. You know, you cut yourself and midichlorians pop out. People forget it's a movie. Like, it's not to the death. It's not like you don't have to break up with someone if they don't like Star Wars. You don't have to hate someone if they don't like the same character as you. So I was always like, there's got to be some levity. There's got to be some humor. So I was always like, what can we do with the sense of humor? Also, as a Lucasfilm employee, I was probably one of the very few people there that was very front-facing to the community, but also showed them that I love them. I care about them. I don't make fun of them. I don't have a mug that says, you know, fanboy tears. I'm not that kind of person. I love all of our fans equally, but also I want women to feel safe in this space. I want children to do whatever they want, be, you know, Jar Jar Binks fans and not get yelled at. Like, it's all that. And I think when you have someone at a company like that, it makes the company even more endearing to fans. I think Steve Sansweet did a great job with that. Filoni is a fan favorite. He's so good with fans. And a lot of our actors, Mark Hamill, so good with fans. Ahmed Best, great with fans. You know, like just really good people at Lucasfilm and really good people when I was there that showed the heart of the company. And I think when you have big conglomerates and big studios, you don't see that. You don't really see that anymore. And that's sad to me because it's like, I'm not George Lucas. I didn't create it, but I'm going to celebrate it and I'm going to make our fans feel heard and listened to and loved and appreciated.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I don't know if that's still a thing. I don't know if I'm talking about old timey times, because that's what I like in a franchise is when I see Filoni, but also I see Favreau, you know, I see Pedro, I see all these people that are like, and also on the Star Trek side, they're doing a great job of it right now too. With, you know, Jerry Ryan and Bonnie Gordon and Will Wheaton and Todd and all these people that are like really, you know, talking to fans and going on to podcasts and spreading the love and showing that they're fans too. That goes a long way with franchises. And, you know, if you don't love what you're doing, if you're just there for the paycheck, Marvel, it kind of shows. So that's why I'm like, if you're, and also that's part of the company's marketing and community outreach. You have to have community outreach and marketing, or else you're just selling shit. You're not caring about what you're selling. And I think that's, anyway, I'm sorry. This turned into like a whole.
No, I was enjoying it. You're doing fine.
The question, but yes, I am a Star. I'm a Star Wars fan through and through for sure.
All right. So let's change gears a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you about this and the only reason I'm talking about this is because you posted it on social. So I figured you'd be okay with discussion.
80 times a day. So I'm not sure what on social I posted.
Well, here it comes.
Okay.
That's you said, I struggle with ADHD, depression, and rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Yeah.
Now, Kathleen and I both deal with ADHD and depression.
Okay.
So we're always on the lookout for new ways to encourage and nurture self-care.
Okay.
So what do you do for self-care on the days when it's harder to be accepting of yourself?
Yes. Which, to get real, I think I said this earlier. Again, symptom of ADHD is forgetting instantly what I say. I've only recently been diagnosed as ADHD. So when I was a kid, that wasn't a thing. That was just, you were either hyper or you weren't. And you couldn't be introvert and extrovert, which I'm both. When I'm on a stage or I'm on a podcast or there's an audience, I'm an extrovert. If I'm around a couple of people that I've just met that I think are cool, I'm an introvert. Like, it's just a weird mix. I mean, I even do secret stand-up, which is like, I do stand-up shows and don't tell anyone I'm doing stand-up shows. So I don't, because I have, okay, friends that, I have friends that are real comedians that I don't want them to be like, oh, get stay in your lane, Burton. Or, you know, or they think I'm horrible. Like, I don't want that. So I've done it since college. I think, yeah, high school, college. I've done stand-up since college. But also I found out a lot of stand-up people are ADHD too. So when you finally get diagnosed, you're like, oh, that explains a lot. Because my default is always everyone hates me. That's the default. Everyone hates me and I have to win them over. So sometimes I'll go into comedy Bonnie mode, or I'll go into, hey, I brought presents. Like, oh, I just met you, but here's some stickers. Like, I just did this yesterday. There's this great woman I just met through social. I'm on Twitter. I'm going to stay on Twitter until they assassinate us on Twitter. Here's the thing. I'm on all socials. I'm still on LiveJournal, my friend. I still use LiveJournal. I still have a MySpace page. I was on Vine until the very end. I just started doing TikTok again. I had to stop because during COVID, it kind of was starting to look like a true crime documentary in real time. I don't know if you can see, but I live alone except for skeletons. I don't even know how, I've lost track of how many skeletons I bought. I have a lot of furniture with skeletons in them, or vintage haunted ventriloquist puppets. I think you can kind of see the one in the purple chair. And so my TikToks look like murder scene videos, because I was like doing a close-up of something peaceful and then I went straight to a skeleton or straight to a ventriloquist doll or straight to some taxidermy, because I collect taxidermy. So let's just say I was going through it. I think a lot of us were during COVID. I work from home predominantly. I almost said primordially. Maybe.
Could have been.
I missed human interaction is what I'm trying to say. So I was like going on every podcast. I was doing stand-up with my fellow comedians, doing corporate stand-up gigs via Zoom, which I'm going to tell you right now, that's a Dante circle of hell I never want to re-enter, because you have no idea if anyone's laughing. So it's just basically like this, but you have no audience, you have no chat, you have nothing. So it's like, oh, I hope I'm funny. You know, my default's always I have to win people over with humor or with presents. Like I said, I had coffee with a new friend that I met over the internet, and I brought her stickers because I'm a huge sticker collector. I've had stickers since birth. Like, I still have scratch and sniff stickers from the 80s that are probably toxic, but I still own them. I have a huge Lisa Frank sticker collection and a huge like Garbage Pail sticker.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like all of those retro things, which now everyone, all the retro TikToks are like, do you have these? And I'm like, do I? Like, do you? It's always like, do you remember these? There's a Trapper Keeper one that I just reposted on Insta. And I'm like, I still have this Trapper Keeper. I have all my Star Wars documents, like my legal stuff. I have tax documents in Trapper Keepers that are like Duran Duran or Lisa Frank unicorns. So my whole thing at the beginning of meeting someone is, how can I impress you? How can I endear myself to you? How can I make it so I'm the coolest person and the friendliest person and the nicest person you've ever met in your whole life and you want to be friends with me instantly? Here's how I keep you. I call it friend tax. So every time I see my friends, I bring gifts. So I bring stickers or patches or food, or I bring, if they have a pet, that pet is set. I get that pet toys every time I visit. There's a pet toy.
Nice.
Here's the thing. Normal people, normal mentally healthy people don't do this. And I was like, why do I always do this? And my brand new therapist, hi, Mary, she says, well, this is an ADHD thing because you think everyone hates you and you're always trying to keep your friends, keep everyone happy, or a people pleaser. But also, if you're around people that aren't ADHD or at least aren't ADHD fluent, like they don't have kids, if they have kids or a spouse or a family member that's ADHD, they know how to talk to you without you freaking out. My thing is, I talk too much. The more nervous, the faster I talk. you know, a misnomer is, you know, when people interrupt you, you think it's rude if you're a normal person. If it's an ADHD, they're just talking, they're just interrupting because they're excited you're making a connection with them. And also they're going to forget something cool. And they just want to tell you real quick before they
Yeah. Yeah.
Why this conversation is going to be a 10-hour podcast you did not ask for because I go off on these tangents. But for me, that's always entertaining to listen to. Like, there's a lot of people in Hollywood that are ADHD that will never come out of that closet. I think Quentin Tarantino is a good example. He talks super fast. Kevin Smith also, you know, they just excitedly talk. They have a lot of things to say. They're very energetic. They're very passionate. And I think that nerd Venn diagram of nerd and ADHD intersects. And also neurodivergent in general. I was a dyslexic kid. I have, I get easily distracted by sensory things. That's why I color code everything. So if I just had regular books in the Dewey Decimal System, I would lose my, I'd lose my cool because I need to visually be okay. And visually looking across the room has to be like color coded things. And that's a neurodivergent thing. And so, but depression is a thing that's been around since humans, right? And it's something that I didn't understand because coming from Midwest, coming from a family of, hey, I'll give you, stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about kind of parenting. Not a lot, you don't have real problems. You know, it's like you're crying because you didn't get on drill team or first chair with band, with marching band, or then some nun told you to, you know, don't sing along. Jesus will be okay if you lip sync this hymn. You know, it's like... You know what I mean? You get told by adults. Adults do negative things to kids all the time. They don't even realize that sometimes it affects kids differently. So I was very thin-skinned. And the minute someone didn't like me, instead of accepting it and realizing that there are people on this planet that will not like you, I think this is a good adult lesson to learn too. You don't have to make it your life mission to win them over. You could be like, hey, I'm not your cup of tea. That's cool. I'll move on. But that's not how I am. I'm like, I'll double dog dare. I'll double down on it. I'll be like, well, what are you into? I'm going to learn it, master it, and be your best friend. Like, that's probably why I know a lot of stuff about things I don't really need in life, because I've done that my whole life. So what I have found, and I am not an expert, I am not a psychiatrist, psychologist, I am not a licensed therapist, but what I will say is an elder goth, someone who's been on this planet for a very long time and has lost friends, lost relationships, even to this day, I keep losing friends. You have to be okay with your weird. You have to be okay with the fact that, like I said, not everyone's gonna love you. That's cool. But you can't make it be like, well, then I don't want to be on this planet. And I think because depression lies to you, your brain tells you the world would be better off without you in it. Your brain numb down your personality or be quiet, or you don't have to talk so loud, or you don't have to be into that thing, or don't be too passionate about stuff. Like, I would say speed dating for me was torture, because it doesn't matter if you're queer or straight, this basically, and it doesn't matter what gender you present yourself as, this affects everybody. It's when you do speed dating with non-neurodivergence and they're like, what? Like, they just want to know what your favorite movie is. If you ask me what my favorite movie is, you get a 2-hour explanation of genre. So I'll be like, okay, so do you mean sci-fi? Do you mean horror? So let's do horror. You mean horror? Great. So do you mean international? What decade are we talking? What director are we talking? What subgenre? Are we talking about like forest witch horror? Are we talking about house horror? Also, are we talking about possession horror? Also, are you talking about female-led stuff? Are you talking about queer-friendly stuff? Are you talking, like, I will just go on and on and on with, well, what do you mean? Instead of just saying, oh, my favorite movie is Blade Runner. I'll just go into like blah, blah, blah. Or my favorite horror film is House, but only because it's a weird Japanese musical that's bizarre and has like a Cheshire cat that sings. People don't want to know that unless they're into that thing that you're into. So speed dating is also, you never know who you're going to sit in front of. So after a while, I just turned it into, this is like a fun thing to do if you get trapped speed dating, is do the Voight comp test from Blade Runner. And that's how you find your nerds, because you'll just ask them the same questions that the guy asked at the very beginning, you know, about the tortoise and about like, yeah. By the way, you can also find out passwords real easy, because I dated hackers for a long time and they're like, yeah.
Oh, no.
So, and also, if you're a girl, they don't realize what you're doing. So I'm like, oh, my God. My first pet had the weirdest name, especially if you like Barbie it up and sound stupid. Like, oh, my God, my first pet, her name was like Alfalfa, which is so weird for a cat. What was the name of your first pet? And they'll say, and then you're like, Yeah, have you ever done your porn name? My porn name, because it's the name of the first street I lived on and my mom's maiden name. Like, you, those are all questions, security questions for credit cards. So I would do that. And that's how, anyway, so depression. Here's the thing. I'm still working on it. I'm still a work in progress. I'm not going to lie. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was in a really dark place. And I was like, wow, sure, my career is not where it used to be. I'm not working for a major studio. I pivoted to game writing, but I miss writing comics and books, but I want to do that, but it doesn't really pay that well. But also I'm in the middle of doing job interviews with video game companies. And if you are not 20 or 25 years old, they don't really want to hear from you. And if you're too old and you're a woman and you're queer and you're ADHD, I mean, I have so many things against me in interviews. And now you have to also get through an AI component to even get to a human, because AI filters out all the resumes, and you can't just put a picture of your wedding photo with R2-D2 to sucker the AI into letting you have a human to talk to. So that hit hard with depression. And, you know, it also hit hard that I moved to LA, which is not an easy city to live in as a creative individual, let alone an older woman. that's not a real housewife or a supermodel. So, you know, that kind of depression, the way I would self-care is I watch funny movies. I read comics that I have on a pile. I have so many to-be-read piles all over my apartment. I have 23 bookcases full of stuff I could be reading in a very tiny apartment. I do crafts. I'm really into book nooks now, so I do those little miniature things. Or, you know, I get online and do a Zoom call or a Google Meet with a friend who has wanted to talk to me for a while. Or I do a podcast like this and remind myself that I'm not a loser or a hack, or I ruin everybody's lives by existing. You know, sometimes you have to trick yourself. You have to gamify your depression and, like, reward you with positive things that you love to do, but also talk to other people going through the same crap you're going through. So I have plenty of support groups I go to. I am a self-help book junkie. In fact, the book that I picked for our Felicia Day Book Club this month, the Maria Bamford book, Cheryl, Join Your Cult. She's an amazing comedian. This is about her struggles with depression and her struggles with addiction and her struggles of just being a weird kid. You know, she was a violin ingenue as a small child. That's not something that you go easily from violin to comedy. Felicia Day just posted her video of her violin stuff, you know, and she's not known for being a violin person, but she's a talented violinist. So it's, you know, you just have to surround yourself with people going through similar stuff you're going through, but also know you're not alone. I think that's why fandom is so important to a lot of people, because a lot of people are struggling with depression or anxiety, or, you know, imposter syndrome is a big one for me. That's a huge issue with me constantly, because I have so many talented writer friends where I'm like, oh, I don't have a movie deal. I don't have a book deal. I'm not, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's easy to forget. But here's the thing. I have a stack of books. Here's just some of the books I've written, but you forget. You forget because you don't be high on your own stash, right? You got to always look towards your next project. You don't want to be complacent, but also, you know, comparison is a joy killer. So depression for me is so multi-layered. It comes out of nowhere. Sometimes it'll last for an hour. Sometimes it'll last for a month. And I've been at the edge of suicide multiple times. And I've also been at the edge of just being like, well, what if I just went to Alaska and didn't tell anyone? You know, what if I just disappeared myself? Not death, but, you know, Alaska. And you kind of have to take a breath, connect, whether it's with people like online or people in real life. Pets are great. I don't have one anymore. My dog is 17 years, passed in 2018, and I just haven't had the heart to get another companion, another dog sidekick. So I dog sit for all my friends. So that's how I get my pet fix. Because let me tell you, pets are great for depression. They pull you out of it real quick. They make you go on walks. They make you play with them. They're good snugglers. They're great for depression. And I highly recommend them, or at least dog sit for other people's, or pet sit for other people's pets if you don't have access, immediate access to pets. That's also a good depression neutralizer, I think, sometimes. So, you know, agreed. I don't know if I answered your question, but I suffer from lots of things.
Oh, I think you did. You know, I think you did.
And also I have eating disorder issues. And that's another thing that I think a lot of people don't openly talk about, that I wish people would more normalize, because I think a lot of people have them. So you know, it's ongoing. It's ongoing, but, you know, I'm glad that you guys brought it up, because it can still be kind of a touchy subject for people to talk about, especially online, especially on YouTube, because if you say certain words, like I probably shouldn't have said the S word or the eating word, because you could get demonetized through subtitles, and that makes me angry that they demonetize you talking about mental health issues that should be talked about. But
well, yeah, because I know they do that a lot on TikTok as well. Like, you know, people have to, they say, you know, unalive instead of
it's a lot of weird, like, goth talk almost, where you, like, have to say, like, I used to say undead, but then people are like, wait, do you think you're a vampire? So, like, but it's true. I don't understand why. I think it's got to be a legal issue. I'm sure that's why most companies do these.
Probably, I would imagine. Yeah.
But, you know, when you have AI in charge, which all of Meta community is in charge, AI. Here, I'm an old timer, so I've been a community manager from the beginning. So I was at Apple when we did eWorld, which was the AOL competitor. And I worked for AOL, and I worked for Discovery Channel on their YouTube division of Revision 3. And I've been in charge of community since community. I've been doing Usenet. I started Usenet. Like, I was doing all this stuff, but it was always a human. And the minute you replace us with AI is when you get in Instagram jail a lot, like me, because I write murder mysteries now. And you can't promote murder mysteries on Instagram, because if they see the word murder or kill, they think you're quote unquote inciting violence.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
you know how many times.
Crime. I don't know how true crime podcasters even promote anything, because it's all that.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times you. So we also have a Facebook group that we admin. And it's called the Funny Science Fiction Group.
I will be following.
And
I will follow.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's right now we have 213,000 members in that group.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a big group, and it's a lot of memes and a lot of quotes and all these different things. And you know, we'll pull like a question out, like, "Hey, what's your favorite movie quote?" And somebody will use the quote from Aliens about nuking it, you know, from orbit.
Oh yeah.
Or get away from her, you bitch.
Yeah.
One of those two. Instantly gets flagged by Facebook every single time. One for inciting violence and one for bullying and, you know, harassment.
I think it's for terrorism at one point too.
Yeah, I think it's because companies don't want to pay for humans. And here's the thing, Lucasfilm, and I'm probably gonna spill some tea. I don't think I'm breaking an NDA or anything, or you know, any kind of like secret sauce. I think most studios do this in general. But Lucasfilm was not a typical studio when I worked there. They were not owned by Disney. George called the shots. It was a small company. We were based in North Bay. We were in San Francisco and around that area. And also I was in the online department, which it was the first of its kind. No other studios had that. In fact, half the company thought we were IT. So like, I think the first time I ever met George was he called down to my phone thinking I was IT. And because he didn't know what online marketing was. And he's like, and it wasn't him, it was his assistant or something saying, "Oh, George's computer doesn't work." I'm like, "I'll be right there." Like, I was just like, "Yeah, I'll pretend to be Geek Squad so I can meet George Lucas. Of course I will."
So did you unplug it and plug it back in, George?
Yeah, it was like dad issues. It was like boomer stuff. I was like, "Oh, yeah, you just need to flick the thing." And also, he writes everything on yellow pad. Which I do also. We bonded on how many yellow pads we have that we write. Like, he handwrit every script and had an assistant named Lucy type out his scripts. And then she became the head of publishing eventually, which was really funny. Or had her own imprint, I think. Anyway, I digress. So I had a point. Oh, what were we talking? What was the question again? Anyway, now I'll get to it.
We would answer the question. We'd gone off into a different job.
No, I probably had a good point. Well, see, this is
we were talking about how AI had started taking over.
Oh, yeah. So at Lucasfilm, I was told I could do stuff as long as A, I didn't need to hire anyone or need assistance from anyone, and B, it was free. So social media came along when people were like, it's a fast, because Friendster had ended, MySpace had ended. Facebook was still for college kids. It wasn't even, I don't think, available for everyone yet. So social media was like this fad. Everyone thought it was a fad. I knew it wasn't, because I was I started at Lucasfilm as the community manager of the message boards. And I also integrated blogs into our sites, fan blogs. So I was like, this is the new thing. This is awesome. We should get in on it. So I was like, doing all this stuff, but I was also in charge of the message boards. But it wasn't just me. Star Wars StarWars.com message boards. We also had IndianaJones.com and some THX 1138 thrown in there. I was in charge, but we had moderators below me, and we couldn't pay them. So I would send them swag. So I would send them Star Wars stuff all the time. And then they were all volunteer, but they were all amazing moderators. So I was always like, we need to give them free access to the fan clubs, never make them pay for anything. I want to make sure that they feel appreciated, because these are people that have to be on there 24/7 to make sure there's no death threats, to make sure there's no racism.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So racism, homophobia, death threats, misogyny, and weird like grooming stuff, like the beginnings of pedophile stuff. Because let's be honest, StarWars.com is probably like, that's going to be ground zero for people pretending to be older than they are so they can be on there. So there's a lot of kids on there. So I was like, yeah, no, this is important that humans are in charge of this. The only thing that Lucasfilm had that was algorithm-y kind of with message boards was cuss words, but we wouldn't ban you. What we would do is put asterisks. But here's the thing. When you have a computer in charge of that and you write a sentence that like starts with ends with an S and then the next word is HIT, it's going to think you're saying shit and it's going to asterisk it out. So then it was starting to be like, wait, I have all these code words, all these words we shouldn't have, but the computer's not smart enough or sophisticated enough to figure out that, oh, that's not a curse word. That's just two words you're putting together. So, and that was in the early aughts. So now, 24 years later, you know, you have computers now in charge of things I was in charge of, which is knowing that people aren't inciting violence. They're just talking about their favorite murder mystery, or they're not inciting violence by whatever, or they're not inciting terrorism by whatever. It's problematic because companies want to save money, and people like me cost money because you want to pay to have a community manager or social media director or any of those people. You have to pay them. But companies don't think we're necessary if an algorithm or a computer or AI can replace us. And this goes all the way back to what I talked about at the beginning of the podcast about how important human connection is in community. And if you take the humans out of your community, if you take humans out of your social media, then that is fans arguing with computers who don't understand what you're doing. Also, if you get in Instagram jail, which I'm in a lot promoting my murder mystery stuff, when you try to contest it, you have to contest it with another AI bot. And sometimes tell us, you know, when you're like, did we make a mistake? Tell us. When you click on it, tell us. It doesn't do anything, by the way. It doesn't go anywhere.
And I was just like,
this is how you make your customers and your fan base angrier and angrier and angrier, which you do not want to have it escalate to the point where you're doing apology tours. You need to like remember that humans want to talk to other humans. So you can't do that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I am very disgusted after I see that. And that's why I kind of gravitate towards fan-made things, like fan forums that are run by fans. I mean, Reddit has its own issues, but it's still at least not, as far as I know, robot-driven. And also, you know, fan sites. Like, I would go to Club Jade all the time for Star Wars stuff because it was female-run or female-fronting run. Or, you know, it was very, like, pro-female, let's put it that way, where it wasn't just...
Okay.
But I also, you know, Force Cast, I was big fans of all the Star Wars blogs that were fan-based, and also just fans really caring about other fans and making community, all caps community, and not a studio just trying to glean data for marketing purposes. So I don't know. It's also weird now because I don't even know where to go for Star Wars camaraderie online other than our basic social media channels. And that's sad because I miss that part of StarWars.com. Like, I think that would have been nice to keep going, but my last name's not Disney or Iger or Kennedy or, you know, so I'm not in charge, but
understood.
You know, Bonnie, we have enjoyed talking to you so much. We like ending our conversations with a silly question. And Tim and I used to do a quiz, and then it was the, you know what, let's just like bounce around silly questions.
But oh, yeah.
We realize there's a silly question that you just stop getting asked as an adult, and that it is an absolute shame that people don't care when you're an adult. So, Bonnie Burton, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, of which era? Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Are we talking fictional? Are we talking real? Are we talking Star Wars?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I just, let's, by the way,
who's your favorite dinosaur? There we go.
I rewatched all of Jurassic Park, and I rewatched all of Godzilla and all of Monarch. So I'm very pro kaiju. By the way, I am
all right.
Dinosaur fan and a kaiju fan. So I probably T-Rex is always going to be my favorite because it's the closest to Godzilla, and mm-hmm. I've always been a Godzilla fan. And, you know, I know there's lots of different dinosaurs to choose from. There's a bajillion of them, and I love them all dearly. But there's just something about T-Rex where he's so ferocious, but also the tiny little arms, and he can't hug you. I love... Also, my favorite monster erotica book I've ever reviewed online, and I did a YouTube video on this, and you can look it up. It's on my YouTube channel if you want to look at it. It was through Vaginal Fantasy Romance Book Club, which was an old book club, romance book club show I did with Felicia Day and some other folks, and I reviewed a monster erotica book called Taken by T-Rex, and it was a novella that you could buy on Amazon during the height of monster erotica, by the way, which, by the way, is a great, there's a documentary on Amazon about monster erotica writers and how in their heyday they could buy a house with all the novellas they were selling for $1 a copy on Amazon. And it is so bad. The book is so hilarious because it makes no sense anatomically or romantically. She basically falls in love with the T-Rex that is rumored to have killed her entire tribe. And it, you know, it's like Romeo and Juliet, but with a T-Rex. And also, if you listen to audiobook, they cut corners. I think they just had Siri do it all. So this is like this monotone audiobook. But T-Rex was always my favorite because he was the most ferocious. And I'm putting a gender on him. I don't know what gender T-Rex prefers.
Sure.
But he's the biggest, the most ferocious, but also I think the most misunderstood. He could also, just like Godzilla, could totally level a town, or level a bunch of things, but also save. He could be a hero at times. Mm-hmm. And I just loved him. And, you know, he ends up being ferocious, but also a hero in all the Jurassic Park movies. The Godzilla movies, I love both the costume Godzilla and the most recent Godzilla, Monarch Godzilla. And I think that's a T-Rex homage. I think that's a like a chef's kiss to T-Rex and what if T-Rex was radiated and came back or had a portal to go through. And Primeval also is one of my favorite TV shows, the British Primeval.
I love that show.
I love that show because it's also like, oh, I guess what dinosaur, the woolly mammoth on the highway. Yes, I'll watch the T-Rex that just shows up in the Thames. The thing that knocks over the Big Ben. Yeah, I'll watch it. So I like any kind of dinosaur related movies, TV, books, comics, video games, podcasts, you name it. But I also realized, you know, as a science, I was a science reporter as well as an entertainment reporter for years and years. I also know there's real dinosaurs and not real dinosaurs. So don't, I hope no one in the comments is like, there's another Flintstones fan. Like, I don't want people to think like, as I would love.
We don't take things that seriously. So
as much as I always wanted a pterodactyl record player as a kid, I know that wasn't a thing in real life. So you don't have to put it in the comments, but yes. But I am curious, what are each of your favorite dinosaurs, if I may ask?
Sure. So for me, I've always been a big, big fan of Triceratops. Because growing up, and I've told the story before, growing up, I always thought rhinos were really cool. I still think rhinos are really very cool. Uh-huh. And to me, that was like a triple rhino, you know, because it had three horns on the head. And it was just this big, it was like, I always saw it as like the dinosaur version of a bulldog because it had the big front and the, you know, and the tiny little back end. And, you know, So Triceratops for me, I just always thought they were cool.
Okay.
Like I just have my stuffed Parasaurolophus on my desk because they're my favorite.
I have dinosaur figurines in my bookshelf, but I also put them in houseplants because I like the idea of like the plant being the Jurassic plant or whatever, and then these dinosaurs. I do a lot of motifs where I have dinosaurs playing with because I was raised pretty heavy core Christian Catholic whatever finger pick. I had Jesus statues and Jesus as your, so there's a bunch of statues you can buy. And one of them is Jesus hangs out with you at all times. Jesus is always around you kind of thing. And I'm not religious now, but I still have the statues because I love the idea. And I have a statue of Jesus playing touch football and, with kids. And the fact that there's a kid about ready to tackle Jesus and the balls on that kid to tackle Jesus, I was always like, you're not even playing touch. You're supposed to be playing touch football, not tackle. And you're about ready to tackle Jesus. Like, That's a commitment to sport. So also the Jesus hockey game one's really good too because he's about to get whacked with a stick. And I just love any, I don't know why I started talking about this. It has nothing to do with dinosaurs, but I do have dinosaurs scattered around my apartment. I also, I ran out of clothes during COVID, and I think our laundry unit was down to the count for like 2 weeks straight one time in our apartment complex. And I ran out of clothes, so I started wearing Snuggies to video meetings in particular. And one of the times I wore a T-Rex Snuggie. That's a fond memory. Corporate.
Awesome.
You know you work for a good company when they don't fire you when you show up to a serious meeting wearing a dinosaur or Godzilla Snuggie when you're supposed to be like in charge of people. Because I was the lead writer there for a while. So it. Here's the thing. Thank you, COVID, for normalizing a lot of weird meeting moments. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, so as you were talking about it, I'm like looking over because I have a 7-inch tall T-Rex being attacked by gnomes and eating a gnome.
Hey, you know what? With depression, never underestimate the power of good selection of dinosaur toys to mix in with your other toys as a way to distract you from sadness. Because there have been many a time where I'm like, oh, I'm just going to redo all my shelves. And so I'm going to put different things. I always put different art, different, it's not just, so I'll put different art or whatever. And also I'll put dinosaurs. And right now I have a huge dinosaur fight happening on one of my Ouija boards. I collect Ouija boards. So they're on one of them, but I don't think anything's going to happen. I wish. Just once I want someone to make a horror film of ghosts that are just dinosaur ghosts. That's it. All of it. Because if this happened, why don't we have dinosaur ghosts? I just want Jurassic Park, but all ghosts. Right. All ghosts. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, talking about making sure that, like, with the depression and trying to revamp your surroundings a little bit, my husband and I have actually been talking about redoing our bedroom, because I love the green that we have in here. But the wall behind our TV, I'm like, it's getting boring. It's boring to look at the same green wall. And we actually found this Art Deco R2-D2 wallpaper that I'm like, well, that's happening. That's going up on that also, wall.
You can also, I think it's Terry Crews has like a man cave or something that's all, and I think Chris Hardwick had this in one of his houses, where it's just wallpaper that's stormtrooper helmets, but flocked.
So yes.
It's very subtle. Like, I know it's the Vader helmet and it's very subtle. And I was like, but fancy, because it's flocked and it looks like kind of Victorian wallpaper. And I let me say this. Star Wars fans today have, and any fan, to be honest, has it so easy to redo your entire life with cool stuff that homewares, kitchenwares, like any kind of decorating stuff. And also, if you can't find it legally, I guarantee you Etsy, somebody on Etsy is making it. So, you know, there's no official Star Wars Ouija board, but you can guarantee I've had four made that are Star Wars. I also collect velvet paintings, so I've commissioned many a Star Wars velvet painting. And here's the thing, like, I feel like it's such a good time to be a fan of lots of different things right now, whether it's sci-fi stuff or fantasy or horror or action or you name it, dinosaurs, space stuff, Barbie, My Little Pony. It doesn't matter. There's like a huge fandom already online, but also there's stuff. So there's people making professional level stuff, or there's official stuff. That's really, I mean, right now they have Star Wars holiday special stuff at Disneyland, which I never, ever thought I would see because it was such a taboo thing at Lucasfilm. But Disney has Life Day stuff. They have a ton of Life Day stuff. So you know, if you are a fan of anything and you want to redo your bedroom in the motif that you want, whatever, you can find it. And it's kind of fun to do that. And it's kind of fun to mix it up. And I am a big believer of, you know, your surroundings can alter your mood. And I don't know if that's the old hippy dippy feng shui mentality, but all I know is when I have all my toys out or all my Lego or I color code things, I'm a recovering goth, but I have a very colorful apartment. And I just like to look around or wake up in my bedroom and like instantly smile because I see something in my eye line that reminds me that I love cool stuff. I'm not a loser. There's other people out there that like the same stuff I do. So I will always have a community to look forward to talking to. And also there's no rules to being an adult. You can have as many goofy stuff all over your apartment or your home or your workplace. There's no police that's going to knock on your door and say, I'm sorry, you have too many lightsabers. I'm sorry, you can't have like, you can't have your entire kitchen in the motif of Battlestar Galactica. No one cares. No one cares. And you should do what makes you happy. And if that's what makes you happy, do it. Because if it's an easy fix like that, if it's an easy distraction, do it. Because I guarantee you there's plenty of other people out there that are doing the same thing. And they just, you know, more of them are showing off their stuff online, on social, on YouTube, on TikTok. Mm-hmm. I get ideas from TikTok all the time of crafty nerds doing cool stuff. So
that's a dangerous, dangerous place. But
I can leave on a positive note that has nothing to do with dinosaurs. It's a lot. You're allowed to have dinosaurs in your apartment.
There you go. Fantastic.
Bonnie, we have enjoyed our conversation so much. Where can our viewers and our listeners go to find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to pitch two things that are recent. I wrote a murder mystery for Magic the Gathering. And it's through Wizards of the Coast. Okay. Beatles and Grimm sells it. They're a great company that sells a lot of Magic the Gathering and Wizards of the Coast and Dice. And they have their own YouTube show that's really fun. But this is it. It's called Magic the Gathering Murders at Karloff Manor, The Case of the Three-Blade Knife. And it's done in the same way I did Hunt-A-Killer games, where you have all this like evidence. You have this interactive badge that you can wear that does AR-type stuff with your phone. Mm-hmm. But also you have all these documents and maps and puzzles and cryptograms and things you have to figure out for passwords. And I worked on it last year with Beatles and Grimms. It just came out last month, and it's getting a lot of great reviews. Fans are loving it because it's not like the typical Magic the Gathering card game, because they also have cards. Obviously, they're known for their cards, but they have Karloff Manor, Murders at Karloff Manor is like a series, a world of games, and this is the first of its kind in this world. And hopefully they'll hire me to do more, hint hint. But also I worked at Hunt-A-Killer for almost 2 years, and this game, RIP at the Rodeo, I made because I come from a rodeo family. My uncle and a lot of my cousins and family, immediate family, are really into rodeo or part of the pro rodeo circuit. And my uncle Rex, who was a legendary pickup man, the guy that picks up people when they like get bucked off or whatever, so while the clown is distracting the animal, they pick up the human and make sure they don't get trampled. He accidentally died in a freak accident in the ring during COVID. So I didn't even get to go to his funeral. But he was one of my favorite uncles, and I wanted to pay homage to him. So I begged, pleaded, and demanded we do a Western murder mystery, which, by the way, I'm sure there's a ton of them now. But when I was pitching this, I had a really hardcore pitch this, because, like, you don't understand, Yellowstone's huge, and so is Dark Waters. And we need to have all this other stuff. Blah, blah, blah. So they finally said yes. And it's a rodeo clown who mysteriously gets killed, and you have to figure out who did it. And also I had a lot of rodeo lore, there's also Mexican rodeo stuff in there too, because that's the rodeo community I came from, was a lot of mix of different cultures and race and all of that. So I didn't want it to be the whitey white rodeo. But also it's just fun because clown violence. I mean, I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of killing a clown in a storyline. But it's also has puzzles and whatever. And game writing is something I shifted to during COVID because I got laid off from my entertainment reporter job at CNET, which was owned by CBS. And I was doing a lot of books for DreamWorks. I do a lot of art of books. But game writing is something I didn't really do, but I was a huge gamer. So a huge tabletop gamer. So when I got asked to do those games, I'm like, oh, and then Hunt-A-Killer hired me as a staff lead writer, a showrunner, as they called it. I was like, oh, no, I'm doing this for now, for the rest of my life. So now I'm just trying to figure out other things. I might do a Kickstarter because I really want to do a drag queen themed murder mystery game. Drag queens, because I come from that culture. I used to live with drag queens. Like, I'm a huge Drag Race fan from the beginning. I was a club kid in the 90s. So I want to do that, but I also want to do more queer-friendly games, comics. I also think, you know, you think about gaming and it's vast, but, you know, there's still cultures, there's still communities that are being ignored or neglected or not represented in these games. So I want to do that. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on right now. But if you want to find me online, I'm on everything since the beginning. So I've been using Bonnie Girl as my screen name since the 90s. I own girl.com still. It's grrl.com since 94, I think. I think I have a lifetime pass.
Oh, wow.
Dotster renamed themselves. So I don't even know what they're calling themselves now. But if you go to that Linktree link that's right there, that's my full name, Bonnie Burton, on Linktree. You will find links to all my books on Amazon and Goodreads and my comics, on my podcast shows. I do two podcasts. I do a horror film podcast called Night Shift that's monthly or twice a month, where we interview female filmmakers in horror genre, but also review indie films with horror being not just final girls, but, you know, main female characters and queer friendly and all that. And then I do a book club show with Felicitations Book Club with Felicia Day. We do it once a month. There's a link to that. This interview I'll put on my link tree when it goes live, so that'll be at the top in the What's New section. But I have a lot I'm on all the socials, like even the socials no one's on anymore, like LiveJournal and MySpace and Pinterest and Tumblr. I'm still very active on Tumblr, but also I'm just trying out new stuff like Hive and Mastodon and Post and Threads and Blue Sky and whatever the next Twitter/X is supposed to be. I'll probably try to figure out a way after I die to still be online. I just think it's very easy to find me. Even if you just Google my name, you'll find my Wikipedia or Wikipedia. I'm on Wikipedia. You'll find
me. There you go.
I'm very hard to
start.
Yeah.
You just got to start scheduling out your posts now, Bonnie.
I can't. You know what? I almost did that once. I made the mistake of doing that when it first started, and I was in charge of all obviously, because I created them all. I was in charge of all the social for Lucasfilm, but also my own. And I had to be real careful on Hootsuite or TweetDeck, whatever I was using, to make sure I didn't accidentally post something from my personal to Star Wars' Twitter. And I did that one time. It took it down quickly, but some of you might remember it because it was very controversial. I had a friend that got a tramp stamp of Akbar. And a tramp stamp tattoo of Akbar's head. And I posted, "It's a tramp," instead of "It's a trap." And you could see you didn't see butt crack, but you knew what it was because it was like, you know, female body. And I accidentally posted to the Star Wars Twitter, which had a...
Oh, that's amazing.
It was the middle of the night, too, because I never sleep. I'm like that girl in the movie Real Genius, never sleeps. ADHD, never lets you sleep. So I did that, and then immediately my phone blew up. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of people up, you know, watching my thing. And I was like, no.
No, they're watching it just on a different channel.
I know. And I had to, like, figure out a way to delete it quickly. And thank God no one figured out screen grabbing. There was no receipts to be had, blah, 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 because it was early on. But I was like, okay, I need to make damn sure that I do not have my personal professional piece that I'm in charge of on the same platform, or else I'm going to accidentally keep posting things to Star Wars Twitter that I'm not allowed to post.
Yeah, never should the two pass. Exactly.
No, I do think we probably doubled our follower count just from that mistake. So in the end, it worked out. It's just, you know, don't do that.
Anyway. All right, guys. We're going to take this opportunity to remind you that subscribing is the single most important thing that you can do to help our show continue to grow. Check out Bonnie's work, too. She listed a couple links there. You can find her anywhere on the socials. Remember, Google's free. All you got to do is type in Bonnie Burton. You're going to find her. It's pretty easy to do so. But remember to hit like and subscribe on this video. It helps us to continue to grow and get amazing guests like Bonnie to come on the show and share these great stories with you guys. But yeah, as a reminder, go check out her work as well. And again, Bonnie Burton, thank you so much for coming on our show and enlightening us with your knowledge and your stories.
I mean,
it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, but also I'm very sorry. Because I did do what I always try not to do, which is talk too much, talk too fast, talk too long, and not let you ask enough questions that are probably on your list. So thank you for putting up with me and listening to.
We'll Bonnie just have today. To do a part two. It's all good.
There you go. See you in the talk.
I'm always available, but thank you for having me on the show. I'm a fan, and I love all of your interviews. You have a great podcast going. It's very friendly. Very nice nerd safe space. So thank you.
We try very hard for that. All right, guys, that's going to wrap us up for the FSF Podcast. Until next time,
bye.
Copyright 2024 FSF Podcast. Reference any specific product or entity mentioned on this podcast does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by FSF Podcast. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact us via email at info@fsfpodcast.com.